And for the next couple hours, we're going to be talking about evil experiences, demons, with Bill Bean, author of Delivered, Dark Force. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. William John Bean Jr., we call him Bill Bean, spent his childhood in a house that was occupied by demonic entities. Now, experiencing everything from the subtle noises to violent physical attacks and bloodletting, just screaming, Bill saw his family slowly get destroyed. He'll tell you about that. Eventually, though, he found some refuge in God and now travels around the country sharing this terrifying, yet some would say inspiring message of triumph over evil forces. Bill Bean, back on Coast to Coast. Bill, always a pleasure.
Oh, it's my honor and pleasure to be back on with you, George. Thank you so much for having me.
You continue to fight the good fight, and you seem to be victorious. I mean, the last time I saw you in Denver, you were up, chipper, and I think you're winning the battle, aren't you?
Well, I praise God for that, and I want to thank you also for having me out there in Denver for the Beyond Belief show. I really enjoyed doing the interview with you. Thank you so much, and thanks to Tom Danheiser as well. And yes, God is blessing me just more than I can ever imagine in my life. And I'll tell you, George, as you know, it is quite miraculous when we dig into this, to the origins of the story and where it all began, and to be where I've been and to be where I'm at now is nothing short of a miracle from God.
That's a good point. Let's go back to Dark Force, one of your works, and tell us just what happened, Bill.
Yeah, I say in Dark Force, which is my first book, I say that the events began in 1970 when my family and I moved into a three-bedroom ranch-style home located in Glen Burnie, Maryland, in a community called Herondale. I found out, George, that it really goes much further back than that. After I had written Dark Force, a family member told me that many, many years ago, a family member, long before I was born and possibly before my mother was even born, had done something to conjure up evil forces, and it really stayed on the family and with the family. And he also told me that at one point, my mother, as a child, and her siblings were having paranormal supernatural experiences and lived in the very area where that house was. So it's just amazing how all these things came together, and I wish I'd known that before I had written Dark Force, but I did mention it in my second book. But, you know, again, it's very interesting to note that, things were taking place before moving in. So I've often said that I feel those evil forces that were conjured up led us to that house where evil was already present and manifest, and that's why it was so severe for my family and I. We were caught in the middle of this evil storm. So, again, the house was located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac, had a very large and deep ravine behind it, and the house was really semi-dilapidated. My father, Bill Bean Sr., was a master carpenter and had a contracting business, and he saw this as a restoration project, and he did quite a bit of work to it, restoring it. And my mother, Patricia Bean, was a homemaker, and by all accounts, you know, my parents were happy. They were married in 56. My sister was born in 57. There was a child born in 63, and George, I could never to this day get the details on this because accounts vary from family member to family member, and I have very little family left now, but the ones who are left have given me different accounts, and some won't even talk about it. Huh. But there was a child born in 63. It was a male child, and he didn't live for very long. So that's what I know for sure, is that he was born, he didn't live for very long, and I don't know how the child died or anything else, but I do know that Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore came and retrieved the child's remains for studies. Now, that's all I know for sure. And I've had, you know, varying accounts and different accounts on this, but that is what I know for sure. And I wasn't born until 66, and my brother was born in 69, so I was 4 years old when we moved into the house. And my first recollections were fear. I mean, the first time I saw the house, even at the age of four, I had this very uneasy feeling. And my sister, who was 13, told me that she had the same feeling. And the house, you know, had this ominous and foreboding look and feel about it from the outside. As I previously stated here, it was semi-dilapidated. And equally so on the inside, you would walk in through the front door, and it had dark brown paneling on the walls, almost black in color, so it was very, very dark in the house. And it just had such a heavy feel and vibe to it. So I am certain, you know, again, I don't know this for a fact because I was 4 years old, but I'm certain that my parents, you know, had to be feeling this from the very beginning. And it wasn't long after moving in that my mother, Patricia Bean, was the first to have an experience, a supernatural experience in the house. And it took place while she was organizing and unpacking boxes in the living room. My dad had taken us with him to go over to his parents' house for the day to allow my mother to have peace while doing this. And it was during the course of this that she felt a presence. And in her mind, she thought that it was my dad sneaking back into the house to play a joke on her. He had that type of sense of humor. And she spun around fully anticipating on seeing him. And her shock, you know, nothing was there.
Oh. This, the sibling that died in 63.
Yeah.
And the fact that the hospital wanted to look at the body, was that unusual, or did they do that as standard procedure?
I would think that's highly unusual that, you know, Johns Hopkins, a very prestigious hospital, you know, in Baltimore, is known worldwide. And I think it's highly unusual that they would come to my parents' home and retrieve the body for studies. I mean, I just think it's, I never could get to the bottom of what exactly happened and why Johns Hopkins came to retrieve that body. But I do know that they did, and for whatever reasons. But I think it is highly unusual for a world-renowned hospital or any hospital for you know, that fact to come and do something like this.
At what age, Bill, did you start getting physically attacked by these entities?
I was 5 years old, so we moved into the house in 1970, and the next year in 1971, at the age of five, I was in bed asleep. Now, the way this house was laid out, George, you would walk in through the front door, you would make a right down a long hallway, which had three bedrooms and a bathroom down there, and my brother and I shared the first room on the right, my parents' room was the second on the right, and my sister's room was across the hallway. We call it the back bedroom, the last bedroom on the left. And I recall being asleep in my bed one night, 1971. My bed was closest to the door. My brother's bed was closest to the window. And I recall being awakened, and I couldn't see anything there. I knew someone or something was there, but I didn't see anything, and I got very frightened. And I got out of bed. I was going to go in and get my parents. And just as I'd gotten up out of bed, a tremendous force grabbed me by my shoulders, slammed me back on the bed, pinning me on my back. And I've told this story so many times over the years, but each and every time it gives me chills because this was one of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had in my life. And I've had many. And I can't relay to you in words the level of trauma and fear I was feeling at that time. I mean, I felt like I was going to die. I felt like my heart was jumping out of my body. I felt paralyzed. I could not move anything. I desperately tried to scream out for my parents, and my voice wouldn't even work. The only thing that seemed to work and move were my eyes. Everything else, I just absolutely felt paralyzed, and the experience felt like it was lasting for hours. I'm sure it only lasted for several minutes, but during the course of that, you know, many horrible, traumatic things took place, and it all ended with the appearance of what I believe was a divine manifestation, and this lady appeared at the foot of my bed, and she was a beautiful lady with long blonde hair. She had a very pale, I guess, bluish type of gown, and she was glowing. And as this angelic being manifested, all the horrible things that were happening to me had suddenly stopped. And I felt so much love and peace and calming from this entity that, you know, with her presence, I began to calm down.
Who summoned her? Then, because you were too young for that, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, again, so this had to be an act of God to send an angel to let, because I kid you not, George, I really, at the age of five, no child should ever have to suffer this type of trauma. And I really felt like I was going to die. I literally felt like my heart was jumping out of my body.
Yeah, how long did you have to endure that, Bill?
Well, that attack, that was one of many. And like I said, you know, it felt like it lasted for hours. I'm sure it was only several minutes. But these attacks went on over the years, many times over the years. And after each and every time, the next day I would wake up and I had these fevers and I had these flu-like symptoms, body aches, all these types of things. This went on for years, George. And my mother truly suffered more than I did, and the level of attacks were far more severe on her than myself. And, you know, it was so difficult to write Dark Force because I had to place myself back and relive all those events again. And I'll tell you, it was, if not for my faith in God, there's no way I could have done it. But I really felt like it was a calling from God to share my story with people, to let them know that even though, you know, we suffer these horrible circumstances in life and good things do, or bad things do happen to good people, there can be a triumph over the tragedy, and there can be, you know, hope and a future. And it took me many years to get to that place, but a lot of horrific things took place in that house over the course of those years. And I thought to myself, you know, as I was writing the book and reliving these things, I thought, how did we live there for 10 years? How in the world did we do it? I mean, you know, it started out on that day with my mother feeling that presence, and then it, you know, escalated into more noises and different things that were taking place, which gradually escalated into violent physical attacks, you know, on my family, from these demonic entities, which greatly contributed to the destruction of my family. It was just a real covert type of thing. And I often tell people this, that when demons are present, they don't just come up to your face and say, you know, I'm here to destroy you now. It is a very subtle, covert thing. It starts out with little things, and then all of a sudden, you know, they gain in power, and they feed off of our fears and all of our negative emotions, and that's how these things can become so strong.
When your family members had this happen to them, and you stayed there 5 years, why didn't you leave? I mean, at what point did your dad say?
Well, we were there 10 years, George. We were there 10 years, and the first five were bad, but the last five were horrific. So, you know, my dad was a man's man. He was a very hard-nosed individual, very no-nonsense, was a good man and a kind man, but was a rugged man's man. I mean, absolutely. And he feared nothing. And he would never discuss this with us. He eventually opened up and discussed it with my mother's mother and told her that he was seeing apparitions and having things happen to him in the house. Now, this is a man that was a very good, hardworking family man. My parents were social drinkers. They had parties and gatherings back then, and that was the norm for that time frame for families to get together and have these cookouts and all these types of, you know, family gatherings. So they were social drinkers, but my dad was a very, very good man, very hard worker. And his character began to change. This was someone that I saw as a heroic type of individual, someone I very much wanted to be like. And it wasn't long after moving into the house that his character began to change. And, you know, I'm so sorry to say that in the way that my parents, both of their lives ended so tragically, and it's very, very sad, and again, it was very difficult to write about. But, you know, this was a man that was blessed with every physical attribute necessary to be highly successful in life. And, you know, here he was not long into the house, and his character's beginning to change. My sister ended up running away in the middle of the night in 1973.
How old was she when she left?
16. Jeez. She was 16, and she couldn't take it anymore. She had she was attacked once in there, and she also constantly felt like she was being followed and watched, so she was never comfortable in the house again. So she ended up running away in the middle of the night in 1973 and married a young man in the neighborhood. And she stated in the A Haunting episode, which Discovery Channel featured my story on the A Haunting series, and my sister mentioned in the episode that she would have, you know, done anything to get out of there. She just couldn't take it anymore. So after she left, you know, again, they really amped up and ratcheted up the attack on my dad. And I'm sorry to say that this hardworking family man, who was a very good man, had suddenly developed a serious drinking problem. And I really feel, looking back on it, George, that he was trying to escape reality, because he was a man that was always in control of the situation. Yeah. He was a take-charge individual.
He didn't know how to handle this.
Exactly. He found himself in a situation that he could not control. So I think it really led him to escape reality, which, you know, he started spending a lot of time in the bars, coming home in these drunken stupors, which, needless to say, was causing problems between my parents. And so this escalated into, I'm sorry to say, my dad physically abusing my mother. You know, he turned into this
a monster, alcoholic.
Yes, who began to physically abuse my mother on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975, and he nearly killed her.
Jeez.
On several occasions. And I'm convinced, based on what I saw, that these demonic forces were able to literally fuel his rage towards her while under the influence of alcohol.
Bill, at this point, were you ever able to figure out who these demons might have been? What entities they may have been?
You know, they gave a depiction, I'll say, in the A Haunting episode, which I don't agree with that, and I really wish that they hadn't aired that, because, again, the name that they mentioned, you know, was an Edward Ziprian, and they said that this was an entity that or a man that became an entity, you know, a man that was historically part of Saunders Range, which was, you know, there in the, I believe, the 1800s. It was a rifle range. And, you know, they tried to say that it was this spirit of this man, which really I disagree with, because that man's got a family, and that's not really, it's not right to put someone's name into something like that. And you know, I never heard from his family, and I'm very sorry if it caused any problems, but that was out of my control. That's, you know, that's what they wanted to put into the episode. But really, George, there were four evil manifestations that I personally saw in the house, and then one divine angelic type of being, which I described. So there were five entities in all, and I really don't know who they were or, you know, what their purpose was, other than to utterly destroy us. And I have to tell you, you know, as this was taking place with my father beating my mother in this way, I mean, I can recall being 8 years old having to run to a neighbor's house and get the police called on my dad because he was killing my mother. I mean, these are horrific memories. And and you alluded to before I came on about the you know, the bloodletting and all these things. I saw so much bloodletting in that house. I mean, it's awful for any person to reflect and have these types of memories. But, you know, in my case, it's all part of the journey. But it's just so sad that things went that way for a man that was so blessed and gifted. So he ended up leaving us in 1975.
All right, and then you became an ordained minister. And let's find out what led you there. Bill Bean, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. So after all this, Bill Bean decided to become a deliverance minister, an exorcist. Why? We'll find out when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Bill Bean here. Bill, you became then a minister, an exorcist. Tell me how that all evolved.
Oh, that was such a long process, George. I'll tell you, you know, again, it took years because after moving out of that house in 1980, we're finally forced out. Two tragedies occurred that would forever change my life. And first, my beloved grandmother, Dora Harvey, suddenly died from a series of heart attacks. And then 2 months and 2 days later, my beloved mother, Patricia Bean, died from a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 44.
It just didn't stop, did it?
No. These are the two closest people to me in my life, George, and I was devastated without them. And, you know, I had a premonition about this probably 6 months before it happened. I had a premonition, and I prayed to God to please take me because I would not be able to bear it without my mother and grandmother. And, you know, God's will was done, and there was another plan. And I'll tell you this now, George. I could not be where I'm at now had I not been there. Do I wish I could go back and change it? Absolutely. But I can't. So all I can do is continue to move forward. So this is all part of the journey. Some of us have a little longer and tougher road to go down than other people, but where I'm at right now, I wouldn't trade for anything, but it took me many, many years to get there because after those two losses, and I'm sorry to say that I carried a burning hatred for my dad for many years, you know, after he left us and, mm-hmm. and for all the things that had happened, I'm happy to tell you that I was able to forgive him. Before his untimely death, he was shot to death in 1987. And I'm thankful that I was able to forgive him for everything. And as I went into my adult years, and certainly after the passing of my mother and grandmother, I was so dark and empty for so long. And I was seeking death, George. I did not want to live. I was seeking. I wouldn't cut my wrist or I wouldn't take pills or anything like that. But I truly was looking for somebody to kill me and put me out of my misery. I was that unhappy, that dark, that empty for so long. So I lived on the edge. I've been in many life-threatening situations during the course of my lifetime. And each and every time God was there to save me and protect me from death because of the time that is now, because of the plan that he had for my life, and because of the way it has unfolded. So I had this epiphany after living in such despair and darkness and emptiness and under oppression, to be even more frank. Each and every one of us were under demonic oppression at various times while living in the house and then after, you know, leaving the house. And I just had this epiphany one day that that I could do better and be better. And I always felt...
It was your calling, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. But, you know, I felt intellectually inadequate because after those deaths, I was so young, I quit school in the eighth grade, and I lied about my age, and I went to work for a local construction company. I had to grow up very, very fast, George, and I had to become a man very, very fast. And so, again, this contributed to the bitterness, feeling robbed of my childhood. And so... After many, many years of many mistakes, which I wrote about in my second book, Delivered, and I'm not proud to have listed them, but I'll say this, it has made a positive difference for many people who have read not only Dark Force, but Delivered, because I listed some things that I'm very ashamed of in there, and it really resonated with some people who have been down the long, hard road as well and who have made mistakes, and they thought they were beyond redemption. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've really gotten something out of it. But one day I had this epiphany that I could do better, I could be better, I could educate myself. And I'm happy to tell you now that, you know, and it took a great deal of effort. And God works with us when we do the work as well. So we can't just say, oh, okay, God magically do something for us here and I don't have to make any effort at all. It doesn't work that way. We have to put forth the effort as well. So after having this epiphany, you know, I decided that I was going to educate myself and I was going to try and do better in life. And let me tell you, it was a process, but I praise God for leading me and guiding me to wisdom and knowledge far beyond anything that I could ever imagine in my life. I'm happy to tell you that I'm an educated man now, and that gave me confidence to be able to relay the story and to write the book. So that's, you know, that was part of the journey too. And then, after the first time that I was on your show several years ago, and then after the A Haunting episode aired, people began to contact me, and I was being contacted from people from all over the world, and so many people were having problems. And, you know, I thought, well, what am I going to do, you know? And so I referred them to other people that I thought could help them. And, George, it really wasn't until 2008 that God really put this calling on me so strongly, and I made my final covenant with him in 2008. I decided, my wife and I got baptized together, and we decided to make God first in our life, truly make him first, and give it all to him. We wanted a clean slate, a fresh start, and God truly delivered me from all of it on that day. And that's when it all changed. After that, the calling became even stronger, and then I started in studies to become an ordained minister, and that's exactly what I did, and it's just been an amazing journey ever since.
Did you become the minister to become an exorcist, or did that come later?
No, actually, that's why I did it, because, again, so many people were contacting me, and I had such empathy for them because I've been there. I could feel their pain, you know? I mean, they would tell me things that certainly resonated with me because I'd had those experiences. And we see over and over again in life that God uses the people who have been down the long, dark, hard roads to be the teachers, to be the ones who could be in a position to help others. Why? Because you can connect with people in that way. You know, I could be the greatest scholar on earth, and if I walked into someone's house and I said, here I am, you know, I've written 500 books, and I'm the most intelligent man on the earth, but if I hadn't had any experiences like what they are experiencing or what they've experienced, well, then it's empty, and they can't trust me. There's no connection. So this is why God put this calling on me, because people know that I have been there, therefore they can trust me, and when we establish the trust factor, then we can sit down and we can start to take care of things, and God will really start to work to deliver these people.
Tell us or show us how an exorcism works, Bill. Like, you go into a room, it's prearranged, I guess, that you're going to do this. Are you being screamed at by the victim? What's happening?
Well, in a lot of these cases, you know, again, the people contact me in advance, and then we have a little talk, and certainly I need to know what's going on. And they tell me, you know, some of these people, they're in so much pain, George, and some of these people are even suicidal because they're at the end of the road. They've gone to their churches. Their pastors turn them away. They've gone here. They've gone there. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to do anything for them. So then they contact me. And what I do, and I don't claim to be a psychic or anything like that, but I will say this, that God gives me gifts, and he gives me a knowing for each situation, because each is different yet the same, because demons have the same MO, and that MO is to isolate people, to wear them down, and then destroy them, and they hope that they can get people to destroy others before they destroy themselves in the process. So after gathering information from the victim, then we set up a time and a date where I can come, and I will go to the home. And the first thing I do, you know, as I'm approaching the home or wherever it may be, God starts to put this knowing in my head. And sometimes it's images, and sometimes it is just this automatic knowing of what is taking place, what the root of it is. But even still, even having that knowing, you know, I'll get out of the vehicle, I will say a prayer in Hebrew asking God, Yahweh, to bring his giant warrior angels to come and carry these demons off in Yeshua Jesus' name. And, you know, I'll just say something like Kadosh, 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 which is holy, 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 you know, Yahweh Elohim, asking him again to bring his giant warrior angels to come and carry off any demonic presence, whether it is on the property or the home, or on the family, whatever it may be. So then I enter into the house, and I say a couple prayers in there. I say the Lord's Prayer, and then I say a house blessing prayer as well, right at the front door. I anoint the victim's heads, victim or victims' heads and family members with oil, and I say another prayer, Psalm 91, And then we sit down, and I have to become a counselor. And sometimes that takes 2 to 4 to 6 hours or more to sit down and really talk. And this is where the trust factor comes in, because if they don't trust me, they're not going to open up. So I have to get these people to open up. And it's not that I want to know all their deep and dark secrets. I have to know it, because if I'm coming on their behalf and God is sending me to come and help them, then I have to get to the root of the problem. And a lot of times, you know, as we're talking and they're bringing things up, it's all confirmation for, you know, what God has already put into my head. So it's really an amazing process. And it is gut-wrenching as well, George, because a lot of these people have suffered terribly. Terrible traumas like sexual abuse and
it's gotta
abuse
be horrible.
From the entities. It is horrible. It really is.
Ever been attacked, Bill?
I never have been attacked, and I praise God for this. Now, let me make this very clear to you and your listeners. I don't claim to be any special one or thing. It is God's power that works through me. He's the one that receives the praise and the glory for everything that he does through me. So I want to make that abundantly clear first. And I have never, ever, nor will I ever be attacked, and I'll tell you why. Because God's power works through me so strongly that these things actually have to flee my presence. They cannot withstand the power of God that works through me so strongly, and I praise God for that.
Now, when you perform these exorcisms, is it always 100% fail-safe that it's going to happen, or are there some that you just can't reach?
Unfortunately, George, I've done now, and probably thousands of people have come to me for help over the last probably 4 years or so. And I wish I could tell you that everyone is successful. I feel that it's successful at the time, but unfortunately, some people revert back into, when people suffer this level of trauma, and myself included. Now, this requires a mindset change. So, you know, you can be delivered from something all day long, but if you are not willing to accept it in your mind, some things are going to creep back in, because we're creatures of habit. So we get into these routines and these patterns. So, you know, in my case, my family and I was so destroyed mentally, spiritually, and physically that we expected these things to happen on a daily basis. It became commonplace.
And they did, didn't they?
Yeah. Yes. So for these people, it requires a mindset change. So I have to stay very involved with them on a regular basis to encourage them, to help build their faith. And this is how they can finally break the chains and move forward in life. So some do, and I have many success stories, and I'm so grateful to God for that. But unfortunately, there are some that don't, and I still stay involved with them, and I still try my best to help them. But, you know, it's very difficult. It really is, and that's gut-wrenching for me as well, because I want each and every person to be delivered and free from it.
Bill, I've been told that the person gets possessed when they let their guard down, when they're drinking heavily or something like that, taking drugs. Is that the case?
It is true. It's very true, because when we're under the influence of something, our guard is down, our defense is down. And so we're wide open. You know, George, many years ago I worked in the bar business. I was a bar bouncer. And I've seen it all. Believe me, I could write a book just on that.
That's a different life altogether, isn't it?
Yes, and I could see it. I could see when people became under the influence of alcohol, some, that you could see this demonic presence come right over them, and it would be a normal acting person, and we could be having a conversation just as you and I are, and then all of a sudden something just comes in and takes over.
Yeah, yeah. They shapeshift.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a very spiritual thing, no doubt about it.
Give us maybe one of your cases, maybe two, time permitting here, before we take calls next hour. Give us an example of one of your exorcisms.
Well, I'll give you one example. This young man, and I'm so proud of him now, I guess he's probably in his mid-20s, and he's a special police officer, carries a badge and a gun, a good young man. he was exposed to a childhood in New York of horrific demonic activity and attacks for many, many years, and he carried that with him all them years. And it was through another friend who I had performed a deliverance over, another young man that I'm super proud of. His name is John Drenner. And after John was delivered, and John, I could read you a couple of these testimonials after I tell you, you know, the story here. But John had brought this young man in. His name is Caleb. And he came in, and boy, I'll tell you, George, you know, I could see it. When someone's under that demonic possession or even oppression, you can see it. God blesses me to be able to see beyond someone's eyes and see what's behind the eyes. And it was not good. And we ended up, we prayed the first time I met him, and I did a binding and casting out. And I knew that that more was going to be required for this, and sure enough it was. So we set another day and time for me to go to his home. And God showed me in my mind that this young man, under demonic influence, was going to try and stab me. I saw it very clearly.
Stab you?
And so, yes, absolutely. So when I got over there, we actually put this young man's hands in cuffs, and I performed this exorcism. And when I put the, I use a mixture of holy anointing oil, holy water, and holy salt. And when I put this on his head, it dripped down, and he spit it back onto me, spit it back at me. And when he did this, the demon began to laugh. So he had this laugh and this scowl, you know, this evil grin on his face. And then he tucked his head real quick because, again, like I previously stated, God's power works through me so strongly that these things have to flee my presence. So it tucked Caleb's head down and hit his eyes. And so I literally had to grab him by his hair and pull him up. And when his eyes met my eyes, his head went all the way back and was facing the ceiling. You know, his head went all the way back. So now he's totally right. Looking at the ceiling.
As long as it didn't spin around.
And it didn't spin around, but these things were coming out of him. And he was delivered right then and there, and it was just amazing how God worked and delivered that young man, and he is doing great in his life now. I'm so proud of him, and John Drenner as well. And I'll read a short testimonial right here from John, Sergeant John Drenner, who was also a special police officer. He states here, "I was under demonic oppression and had attempted suicide several times. Then through a friend, I was guided to Bill Bean. Since meeting Bill, my life has been totally transformed, and I'm forever grateful to God for working through Bill to save my life. I feel that Bill Bean is like family to me and is one of God's mightiest warriors on this earth." That is from John Drenner, and I'm just so proud of him. George, I stay actively involved with so many of these people.
Good for
you. I love them dearly, like family.
Can this demon re-enter that person even after you've exorcised them?
Yes. If the person goes back to doing things that opens certain doorways,
okay.
Absolutely.
Would it be the same demon or a different one?
It could be seven worse. The scriptures tell us that once a person is delivered, if that person goes back to doing certain things that would open the doorway up, then seven more wicked than the original will come back.
Not good, is it?
Not good at all, and I warn people about this, and this is why I stay actively involved with them, and I try to encourage them and build their faith up. And you know, and some of these people now, like John and Caleb, and another dear brother of mine, Jeff Leeper, whom I performed a deliverance on a couple years ago, he was on the edge of death, and God saved him, and now he too is about to become an ordained minister. And he is just following right along, and he wants to help people as well. So it's just absolutely amazing how God is transforming these people's lives and to where they're doing good for others.
Bill, we're going to come back next hour. We're going to take phone calls, questions, and maybe even demonic stories next.